announce that. We're at the beginning of Hakdama Shnia, which is on page Chaf Zayin in the new version. And I want to begin by noting that last Friday we marked Asara B'Tevet, the 10th of Tevet. And the 10th of Tevet in Israel is known as Yom HaKadish HaKlali, which basically means it's the day of saying Kaddish for everybody who had nobody to say Kaddish for them. Which means if you and all your relatives were killed out by the Nazis, then that's the day that somebody should say Kaddish for you. And it just raises an interesting phenomenon I was discussing with someone today about, there was a speech last night in the shul about Yom HaShoah and different perspectives on Yom HaShoah. I didn't go to it, but I heard about it afterwards. And the notion today of Shoah, of remembering the people who died in the Shoah, is on the one hand, on the general public losing steam, and because it's losing steam, there's a needed a sense of urgency, a great and growing sense of urgency about remembering the Shoah. So in addition to our Zionist bent, we're going to see today that Rav Teichtal focuses very much on he can't help it, he's living in the Shoah and the pain that it's causing him. Okay, so we're gonna dive right in, and we're gonna try to cover a decent amount of ground because I want to get to some of the points he makes. Actually, I made a mistake. We're not Hakdama Rishona. We're Hakdama Shnia. Peh Lamed Gimel. Okay, Peh Lamed Gimel. Medubar. We did the first Hakdama. Medubar Beruach Nishbara. I'm speaking with a broken spirit. Al Shever Bat Ami. That's a quote from Eicha, obviously. Right, the destruction of my nation. Asher Kara Lanu B'Yamim Elu. That happened to us in these times. Asher Hagalut Gavra. This galut, this exile, has grown, has overcome us, and has made us into like a prison, and into beit hashevi is captives. Asher kulu itnaya beit, everything is included in it. Kedichtiv as it says, asher lamavet lamavet, he who has been sentenced to death to death. Vasher lacherev lacherev, he to the sword to the sword. Vasher laraav laraav, he to starvation. Vasher lashevi. Lashevi, meaning the Navi prophesies that this would come true, and we're living through it. And as it goes on, the farther on you go in the pasuk, the worse you are. Meaning, you would think that death is the worst thing, and the worst thing somebody could do is kill you, but it's not true. Meaning, if they killed you right away, if you died right away, you were best off. And then lacherev lacherev, I'm not entirely sure. To the sword, better than just dying on your own, being executed. And la'ra'av, la'ra'av, starvation is even worse. And shevi, in captivity, is even worse. Have you ever talked to, or heard from, I'm sure you've all heard from survivors. Have you ever known a survivor personally? Mm-hmm. So in our shul, there were a number of survivors, and the people who survived, they tell you that one of the things that they remember from being in the camps, other than the obvious Nazi oppression, is the constant hunger. You were always, always thinking about food. Because there was never enough to eat. And however much you got to eat, after you ate, you were starving. And he said it became so overarching. You get what I mean? It's like, I never have this in my experience. This idea of always being hungry. And he said it became so overarching that you just couldn't think about anything. And the Nazis counted on this. Right? They counted on the fact that the Jews were just, you know, they kept them on like, you know, they say 800 calories a day or some obscene low level. Because that's how you control. That's how 12 people control 12,000 people. Because they're just all starving. They're delirious with starvation. And half of them die. In captivity, it's got it all. And all of the horn of Israel has been uprooted. Since the creation, since the Jewish people have been established, there was never such a traumatic experience like this one. Emet, kvayala olamim tkufot kashot Israel. In truth, there were difficult periods in Israel. Ava mekomot mekomot, chalukot shono v'shonot. He says, but if you think about it, think about terrible things. What do you say is a terrible experience of the Jewish people? The Spanish Inquisition. What? Chalmitzki massacres. Right? Okay, Spanish Inquisition, as bad as it was just the Jews of Spain. Right? The Chelminsky massacres, right? Where that was just
Ukraine,
whatever. And at that time, there were Jews in other places. Whatever happened, you could, however bad it was, there was an escape somewhere else. But in such a widespread manner, b'chol mamlachot Europa, throughout all of Europe, shemi olam haita merkaz yehudim, that was always the Jewish center, v'chol gdolenu v'chachamenu mimenu yatsu b'meot hashanim achronot, every gadol, every Jewish great leader, right? I mean, in his experience, we're kind of ignoring this part. But okay, all right. V'ata nehersa, now it has been totally destroyed. The aru aru ad hayesod ban, it has been uprooted. We're trying to start on time. We think we'll see what happens. What? No, it's great. All right, and it is an uprooted and up until its foundation. The enma completa, and there's nowhere to go. There's nowhere to escape. Kichol medinot sheba olam sagusha areyam mipaneinu. Right, because no matter what you try to escape, what happens? All of the countries of the world have closed their gates. Ema sagur umesugeret ve'en yotzei ve'en ba. No one comes and no one goes. Kazeh lo haya, it never happens. Zulat b'yimei haman harasha, other than the Purim story, of course. Shigam ken hayta gzeira klalit al kol ha'am kadosha. That was a general gzeira, a decree on the entire nation. Misagar ba'adam kol sharei hamedinot kivuah b'midrash, and all of the sharim, the gates. I never saw that midrash. Anybody ever heard of that midrash? That the Jews had no escape from one place to the other. Wouldn't surprise me. Ukaet. So he's describing the. I mean. That everything we know about, that the Holocaust was the greatest Jewish tragedy in the history of the world.
I'm sorry.
By far.
And he said that's right. What year is he writing this particular piece?
Hold on. I'll tell you. I think it's 42. It goes at the end. Yeah. Tavshin Gimel.
It's not even
43.
In the throes.
It is in the throes. Poland is pretty much decimated by now. 1943? I mean, yeah, you're in the heart of it all. And the Nazis are still on the run. America hasn't entered the war. Right? The Nazis are at the height of their power. There's not even a hope that anyone can see on the horizon of trying to fight this thing. You know what I'm saying? Like when the Americans entered the war, when the Japanese, for whatever ridiculous reason, decided to bomb Pearl Harbor and gotten America into the war. And then you can see, oh, America, there's a hope, there's something, you know, the Russians are coming or whatever. But at this point, the Nazis are still, anybody ever study a little World War II history? Right, they're still marching eastward, they're still marching westward, they're spreading southward, they're in Egypt coming northward. It's like, I mean, it's hard to imagine, you're not only in physical hell, you're in mental hell because there's no way out of it. There's no way, there's nothing. You know, it's hard to imagine. Uka'et, now, shehigiyu lanu yamim she'en bahem chayfetz, these undesirable days, nitrad mochi mitzarat ha'ador milahamid b'hilchot kvuot kedarki me'odi. He says, I'm so occupied with the pain of the generation that I can't learn. Halachot kvuot. He said, you know, like, this guy's a Rosh Hashiva. What did Rosh Hashiva do? They learn Torah. They can't learn. Kitzricha shmata tziluta. Okay? Shmata tziluta. Tziluta means Torah requires tziluta. Rejoicing, joy. Va'odzot ki ayidei sa'arat ha'galusha takfa aleinu nitbatla ha'yeshiva mi beit midrashi. He says, and there's also another problem. When the war broke out, they closed down, my yeshiva fell apart. Ki bo bayom mar, in that bitter day shepartua pra'ot ba'am, that the attacks came. The chamsu v'ramsu kol ha'kodesh, and they destroyed everything holy. Nitgashu ha'talmidim b'nei yeshiva mi'cheder haratam. Right, all the students, they got kicked out. V'nish'arti levadi mitbodeh b'machshavti al churban Yisrael. So like, it's like, you have this picture, this really pathetic, sad, tragic picture of the Rebbe. He's sitting in the classroom, and there's no students there. Why is there no students? Because they all got kicked out. They all had to run. Okay, levadi, and I was left alone. Mitboded b'machshavti. Mitboded. Hitbodedut is
right.
Reflect. Right. Self-reflection.
Prayer.
To ponder. Well, now we do bodedut as prayer, but it's really pondering alone. Hitbodedut b'machshavti al churban Yisrael v'churban hakilot shenasa b'yameinu. The destruction of Israel and the destruction of the communities in our day. Omer asa Hashem kacha. Umachari ha'af hagadol hazeh. What's basically he asking? He's asking the question of all questions. Why?
Why is Hashem angry?
Right? Why is God doing this to us? Well, like, you know what I'm saying? You know, it's so interesting. We touched on this last week, if you recall. We touched on it. He said, I'm sitting all day. All you do is more bad news and more suffering and more suffering. And you, at some point, you start to ask yourself, why is this happening to us? Because, by the way, and it's interesting, what he clearly says is, where is it coming from?
Sure.
From God. Right? God is doing this to us. So, but I want to know why. And he's, and to him, it's obvious that Hashem is doing it to us, because it's clearly like focused on the Jews. And the Jews can't get out, and the Jews can't get anywhere, and there's, you know what I'm saying? I was teaching today, and I raised the in the Megillah Atzmaut, in the Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel, the term the Ba'ayat HaYehudim, the Jewish problem. I said, are you all familiar with the term Jewish? The Jewish problem is, what was the Jewish problem?
There were Jews.
There were Jews. Exactly right. That it was borrowed. They borrowed the term from the Nazis. The Jewish problem. It's like you read the Megillat Atzmaut. To what degree the creation of the state is directly connected to Nazi Germany, and like many of the law of return was totally based on Nazi Germany. You know what I'm saying? What you didn't know that? Right? Who determines?
One grandparent.
Right. One grandparent is, if you have one grandparent who's Jewish, you are eligible for immediate citizenship under the law of return. Where do they get that from? Because the Nazis, when they determined if they were going to kill you as a Jew, it was dependent on whether you had one grandparent. It's directly related. Just as an aside, now it's a matter of somewhat controversy because there are a lot of consequences of that law. Like one huge consequence is many, many, many non-Jews who become Israeli citizens under the law of return because they have one Jewish grandparent. Okay, anyway, but we digress. Nonetheless, these students of mine, they had never heard the term the Jewish problem. You know, and they didn't know what the Jewish problem was. And with how the Nazis tried to solve the Jewish problem. Okay. That all comes from God, he says. V'natati libi latur v'lachkor. Do you know what that phrase is? V'natati libi latur v'lachkor. Anybody recognize that from anywhere? It's one in, that's why we do this in Hebrew. It's a paraphrase of Natati libi in Kohelet. Natati libi latur v'chachma. Right? There's a reason why you want to do it in Hebrew, and the reason is because he's borrowing from the language of Tanakh, as much as I recognize it. B'karot yimei chaye in chaye imenu, in the goings on, the history of our nation, asher nitan bibor sh'on hagaliyot v'ashmadot v'atzot ha'amim zeh kabam shanadot, finds itself in this pit, this sweltering, lurid, vile pit of exile for 2,000 years. V'im ki me'olam lo asaktiv she'ekav she'elot ka'ilu. He says, man, how come I never ask these questions? Because I was always in the Beis Medrash, in the house of God. What was I busy doing? I was busy learning. I merited to teach, to learn, to teach. This guy said, I wrote Sfarim. I wrote halachic works. Gdolei Hador like them. I've never seen it, but it was published in Tafresh Pei Dalet. Okay? Lama Dalet at the top. Ubimichtav Rabbeinu Ish Elokim Miastrovtsa Shinispas Sifrei Tov Yigal Shinitpas Vishnat Tafresh Pei Vav. So when you write a book, what's the first thing you do when you write a book? What's that? You send it out to the Gedolim and you ask them for Haskalos. He asked him for letters of approbation, and he got a bunch of nice letters, and it's very fulfilling when Gedolim write nice things about you. He says, I was busy. Umeolam lo lakachti lipnai. I never took the time. Vehitanyen v'ninanim hanogiim l'she'elat hachayim shaklal umenu hakadosha. Never took the time to immerse myself in the questions of the life of our Jewish nation. A very interesting idea, he says. I was so busy learning Torah that I never bothered to ask myself about what?
The Jews.
About the Jewish people. It's a very interesting and powerful and biting criticism. There's always we used to talk about this in rabbinic conferences, that rabbis were so busy giving Shabbat drashot and shiurim on the nuances of every little mitzvah. Like, when's the last time the rabbi, we would say, and I took this to heart a lot, mentioned God in his drasha? Like, when, you know what I'm saying? I mean, maybe your rabbi, I hope your rabbi did, but it would happen a lot. What?
Yeah,
good. It would happen a lot that, you know, we get up and we talk about this halacha and this problem in the community and this issue and that issue, but rabbis never talk about God. Why? Because somehow we take it for granted that everybody knows about God. Now I've got to talk about the terrible article against Israel in the New York Times. So I would try to make a point to once and now and again mention God. Because, you know, it would make sense to mention God in a shul. He said, but he was so busy, and this, we do this, I think, our children do this. Like, they learn so much, they learn Mishnah, and they learn, you know, Chumash, and they learn Gemara, and it's like always the next thing, and learning this Mishnah Baal Peh, and that thing Baal Peh, and they do it beautifully. And we do it beautifully, yes. Except we forget something. Like, what about the broader issues? What about the larger issues? What about the Jewish people? Are we, you know, we never really talk about that question. Do we, as the Jewish people, are we fulfilling our mission in any way, shape, or form? Are we addressing the broader questions of what we're supposed to be accomplishing? We never really talk about it, because we're so busy learning, you know, brachot, or Eim Abanim Samecha, or whatever you want to talk about. It's just an interesting criticism.
What is our mission?
What?
What is our bigger mission?
Our broadest mission? According to the Torah, our mission is Yod Bi'a Mamlechet Kohanim Begoy Kadosh. Bring godliness to the world. One could argue we're not so good at that. One could argue. Okay. Line 3. Kihi mitzvah sheshar te'asayodeyayachirim. Va'az nomar kol chafetzecha lo yishvuba. That's exactly what do people who learn say? They say exactly that. They say learning is the most important thing. And as long as I'm learning, that's important. And everybody else can do all the less important stuff. Like, you know, issues of the Jewish people. And what are we doing here? And where should we be going? Community issues. Ve'en levatel limud Torah bishvilan. Really, you shouldn't negate learning a Torah because of it. Now he said, that's halacha, and I was right. Aval ka'et, but now, petocha afecha gdola, and this uprooting, this unbelievable overturning, asher I efshar letzamtzem et hamoach v'havayat abayi v'rava v'halachot amukot. He says, I simply cannot focus my brain on the arguments of Abaye and Rava. And you see yourself like, you see him sitting down to a Gemara, opening the Gemara that he knows by heart, that he's learned 1,000 times, and he just can't do it. It doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Like knowing what's going around him. V'gam ki talmidai nitgashu memechitzati. And you hear, like when I read this, he says that my students are gone. If I were to say another word, he's depressed. He's totally dejected. Like, what am I supposed to learn for? Like, I don't have any students. What am I going to do? V'ein li'imi latzeit v'lavo v'masa v'matan shel Torah. I'm alone. I have nobody to talk to. V'no'orai b'kiri ha'she'ila. And this question is gnawing at me in my gut. Hare ne'amar b'Daniel. Ad matai ketza plo'os. And they asked him, Daniel, in the book of Daniel. No, when? Ad matai. Like, what's the question? Question is? When is Mashiach going to come? And in his context, the question he's asking is, how much longer do we have to go through this? When is it going to end? V'halo anu omdim kvar samuch l'erev yom hashishi. Uchtiv v'ahi le'et erev yihye or. Ayin shem b'rashi. We are now standing close to the end of yom hashishi. Everybody familiar with this idea? There's a midrashic idea that history is only 6,000 years long. And throughout, and each day of creation corresponds to 1,000 years in history. And then Shabbat is the Biyat HaMashiach. So we're now 5771, right? If you had to say 5771, like 771 out of 1,000, like where are we during the day? Sun is halfway down. Okay, so he was now 5, 7, 3, 5, where was he? 5, 7. What's that? He was 5, 7.
Minus 60, 1, 3.
Tafshin Gimel, 5, 7, 0, 3. He was 70 years ago, right? And he's thinking to himself, maybe
that's
we're there. What? Yeah. Okay. Dekodim Shigru Elef Shana Yeor Hanoga. Before the 1,000 years are out, the light, the noga, the light of the redemption will shine. Okay? So if you look in the piyut on Rosh Hashanah of Shacharis, everybody, of course, recites all the piyutim on Rosh Hashanah, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of the lost arts, you know what I'm saying? Nowadays, we skip every possible piyut we possibly can. Okay, he says like this. Kishachama noteh b'ma'arav shtei yadot sha'a mechahe orim. Okay? When the chama, when the sun is leaning in the west, two hands. Sha'a mechahe orim. Does he give a translation? I don't know exactly how to translate that. The light of...
When the sun turns westward in two parts.
Okay. What's the next?
It's a time when the light grows dim.
The light grows dim. Kain ad shelo yavo ha'erev, before the evening comes, yitzmach or le'yisharim, the light will begin to grow, the bright light. V'hei le'ered, le'et erev yihyeh or le'hadurim. It's a poem, meaning, before the evening comes, will come the ultimate light, meaning Mashiach will come. Ad kan l'shona.
Implying that it's not the start of the seventh day.
We're not waiting till 6,000.
The end of the sixth day will be the start of the Mashiach.
Like now.
As in the light won't stop.
When does Shabbat start?
Shabbat,
correct. Correct. Nobody waits. It doesn't go until the end of the sixth day.
The light is not going to stop.
So here's the question, and you have to ask yourself: are we making Shabbos early? Can we bring Shabbos early, or do you have to wait until it gets dark? What does that depend on?
Time of year.
What? No, you can bring in Shabbos early anytime you want. So what does it depend on? It's a very good analogy.
Depends on if you're ready.
Depends on whether you're ready. Whether you want to bring in Shabbos. You make Kiddush. You light the candles. Very interesting question. Uke meduma, think to me, says, Shikvari gana lezeh ashiur. We have hit it. Okay, let's get the parentheses. V'adayin ben Yishai lo ba. We're at that time. The sun is setting. And where is ben Yishai? He's not coming. V'al korchachem, if that's true, sheyesh ezem miniyashim me'akevet me'itanu v'ta ge'ula. Something's holding back the ge'ula. He says, listen, if the time has come, if we said in the piyut of Rosh Hashanah, that the time has come, and it didn't come, so what's the reason why it didn't come? Something's holding it back. And what do we have to do? If I can figure out what's stopping Mashiach from coming, if I can remove that thing, then Mashiach will come. To remove a stumbling block before Mashiach, that will come immediately, and get us out of this hellhole. And to raise up the Shechina from the dirt, from the dust. I'm going to try to figure this out. This is what I've decided to put my mind to. Basically, he's saying, why are we suffering? But moreover, he's saying it in a very different way. He's saying, really, if you think about it, Mashiach is supposed to be here. But something's stopping it. So if I can only figure out what that thing is that's stopping the Mashiach from coming, if I can figure that out, I can remove it, and then I can get Mashiach to come. Seems so nice and easy, doesn't it? Nice and tidy, if only I could just figure it out. Ozot, he says. He's going to get to a punchline. This is very heavy stuff. Ozot, kiniskarti ma'amar chazal nivar b'rosh chodesh Perakanidanim, one second. Reshit Chachma, sorry, Perakadinim, I don't know what that is. Vizelashono. Mishu Hagun Vyerechet. If someone is appropriate, Al Yimna Atzmobadiot Vitzachem Shav Yisrael, he should not hold himself back from engaging, immersing in the needs of the Jewish people. Umimlaamor Aleim Bechol Darchehem, and he should not fear from standing up in all their needs. Vyisam Masa'am Vyisbotir Chatam. Okay? And he should bear their burdens and take care of their tirchas, their troubles. Someone who does this is upholding the world. Someone who's a king in justice, he is holding up the whole land. What if you say to yourself, you know, this is, we all do this. Hey, Dan, would you like to serve on the vod of your shul? What? Somebody did that to me. Oh, it was you. And I, like a smart person, said, sure, right? What do you say? What's your natural inclination to say? You know, I'd really rather do pretty much almost anything than get into communal leadership. Okay? Why? Because you got to deal with all the trouble, all the problems, he says. Someone who is who has the ability to do this and doesn't, he makes himself like truma that's taken off the dough. Like, what do you have to do to truma that we take off the dough? Like, totally separate. You like, you just leave it alone. It doesn't, you don't want to mix with anybody else. It's like you're destroying the world. Meaning, if you have the ability to make your shul the right, the proper place it should be, and you hold yourself back from that because you don't want to get involved, you're responsible when the shul falls apart.
It's interesting because it's the same lashon, it's the same concepts that are described for limited Torah.
What do you mean?
That I mean, if you're supporting the world, and that if you're amavato mazeh, that you're destroying
the world. Okay, shenamar v'ish trumot yeharsena. This person of trumot will destroy it. Maaseh Rabbi Avohu. Story about Rabbi Avohu. K'shabal l'sadik min ha'olam nichnasu chamidei chachmei Yisrael etzlo u'metzau shu boche. Right? He's about to die. All the rabbis come in, and they see he's crying. Amru lo, lama ta boche? Alo kol yamecha yaga b'tara ita. And what are you crying for? You were like all your whole life, you were a Rebbe. Kol kach tamidim hemarta, you had that many students you made. V'la'ot ela shemidai teirayesh v'cha shalon esakta bedinim. Even better, you know what? You weren't involved in judging cases. You, which is, I have to tell you, if you've ever been in like the rabbinic world, which none of you have, the worst thing you can do is immerse yourself in community politics. Because there was never a right and a wrong. And no matter what you say, the person who obviously you judge against is going to be mad at you and claim you were biased. I've had such experiences. Okay. And bring phone calls. Amar lahem. I kid you not. Aleha ani bocheh. That's exactly what I'm crying about. Shel nasati b'masa'an shel Yisrael. And because I didn't bear the burden of the Jewish people. V'kiyamti ma she'ne'emar v'itrumot yarsana ad kalash chazal. Meaning, he separated himself from the needs of the people. I will just add as an aside, one of the big problems I think in our communal world today, especially in the exile, more in the exile, I don't know about here, yeah, probably here too, is that the leaders in the communal leaders, the people who are considered communal leaders now, are the Rosh Yeshiva. And not that Rosh Yeshiva is anything wrong with them, but the Yeshiva is a different world than communal life. Right, in Europe and even in America for a period of time, that who were the great rabbanim, who were considered the gedolei hador, they were rabbanei kehilah, the communal leaders, and there's a huge difference if you're getting shyless from people and you're in daily life, or you get to be, like I learn in the yeshiva and I teach my students and that's all I deal with. And I don't have to deal with, fighting spouses and children problems and money problems, and I don't have to deal with all that. That's nice, isn't it? But then how do you lead? How do you teach? You have to bear the burden. Just also, Moshe Rabbeinu says it also, like you'll see in Parshat Yitro, right? That Moshe Rabbeinu, the people stood all day and all night, when the people came to see Moshe Rabbeinu, what did they stand all day and all night to hear, to waiting for him for? What was that long line for? Anybody want to?
He was judging.
You ever wonder, though?
They have to deal with the kids.
What?
You have to deal with the kids.
You ever wonder, how is it possible that they all had so many Dine Torah? They didn't have anything. What were they all fighting about? What was the judging? What was he judging?
Answering questions or philosophical disputes.
Philosophical disputes.
Maybe anything.
Right.
Moshe was very clear.
What's that?
Moshe was very clear about what it is he was judging later on.
What was he judging them?
When he says himself,
Eicha. Ramban, it's a beautiful Ramban on that section about what they would stand all night. Ramban says there were three things. One, if they lost something, they went to Moshe and asked him to help them find it. Right? As you see in Shmuel, remember in the Sefer, in the book of Shmuel, when Shaul first meets Shmuel, what was Shaul going to do when he first met Shmuel? His father lost two donkeys, and he sent him to Shmuel to help him find the donkeys. Like, that's what they went to the,
Can you translate the first pasuk? I didn't understand.
One more time?
Kevin mentioned a pasuk.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry. Moshe Rabbeinu in Beit Hanan, when he's complaining about not getting to the land of Israel, he says, Echa esel levadi, how can I carry by myself tarchachem, your tirchot, your troubles, u'ma'asachem, and your burdens, v'rivchem, and your fights. The Ramban doesn't say it in that negative way. He says a little more positive. He says the second thing they asked him for, they had a halachic shilas, of course, which makes sense because they had just gotten the Torah. So it makes sense that, like, you know, they wouldn't know anything. So, you know, can we eat this? Can we not eat this? What are we supposed to do? They asked him. The third thing they would ask him for, they came to him to ask him to pray for people who needed a refuah. You know what I'm saying? You need the connection to God. So Moshe Rabbeinu was really, he didn't sit in the Beis Medrash all day. Hare, third line. Shechazal chivo lehitbonen al matzav ha'am Yisraeli ulatapel betzarcheihem. God, the Chazal, they commanded us to immerse ourselves in the needs of the nation, right? And immerse ourselves in their needs. Hem chivu zot afilu b'shanim ketikunam. And they made us do it even when things were good. Shakol holech b'mirut ha-tivi, everything goes along in nature nicely. Mishalom, mishalva, asterim ba'olam. It's peaceful, it's wonderful. Alachat kama v'kama, she'achiyuv al kol bar Yisrael litbonen al matzav ha'am Yisraeli. How much more so that we should try to ponder the needs of the Jewish people? B'shanim ke'elu, in years like this, she'nishpal v'nigda kol kerem Yisrael, when we're degraded and we're lowered. Meaning, how's he taking it? He's taking the idea, what is a leader supposed to do? A leader has to bear the burden of the Jewish people. He's saying, what are we supposed to do here? What do the leaders need to do here? So leaders can do one of two things. They can say, that's not my problem. I don't know. How am I supposed to know why God's doing this? Or they could say, we better figure this out. And the inclination was?
The former.
But the necessity is the latter. And we talk about this. We talked about this last week. Whenever something bad happens, right, what's the initial reaction? What's the immediate reaction of everybody? Who are we to say what the cause of such a tragedy is? I think we discussed this last week in terms of the fire. Right? And everybody rushes to criticize Rabbi Avadi Yosef when he comes out and says it's because of lack of Shmirat Shabbat. But nobody says anything else. So how are we supposed to know what we're supposed to do if nobody tells us what to do? I mentioned last week, I struggle with that a lot. Right? You know, how do you solve a problem if nobody's willing to tell you what the problem is? Do tshuva. You know.
Could everyone also feel satiated by just giving stuff as well?
Okay.
These aid funds pop up, everyone gives money, and then everyone feels better about it. They don't have to do anything. They just give every bit of money, and then they don't check whether that money even got to it.
Well, no, I'm saying, but even so, let's say you say, I'm going to improve. Okay, you're supposed to do tshuva, you're supposed to repent. Like we just had that, Asa Rabbi Tevet. The general, we often forget about this. Why do we fast? Why do we fast on a fast day? What?
Commemorating negative events that we're trying to do a tikkun.
Correct, but what's the fasting for? What do we fast for? Why don't you eat food?
Focus on the event.
And? So we even forget this. The whole point of the fast day is not just not to eat food. The point of the event is to put ourselves in a little bit of tsar and a little bit of pain. And hopefully that will propel us.
The base of
but it'll propel us to improve ourselves. It's about self-improvement and tshuva. And what do we do on fast days when we're fasting? We do basically anything we possibly can to distract ourselves from the fact that we're fasting, in the hopes that the fast will pass just quickly enough that we can go have dinner. You know what I'm saying? Like we're very good at the ritual part. Extremely good at that. But the larger questions, like those, are much harder to address. Much harder to address. Anyway,
simply summed up, if you really understood why you were fasting, you wouldn't want to eat. And so, if you can remotely comprehend why all these fast days events, you wouldn't want to eat on those days.
Okay, I won't ask a show of hands, but how many of us ourselves would say that we spent any part of the day thinking about the nature of the day
on that day? That we do. I wasn't saying
100%. I'm saying there's an irony in that we fasted. We didn't eat a whole day, which is a pretty big thing. But never actually spend any time thinking about why we're not eating the whole day. You know, I was getting ready for Shabbos, and we cooked, and we cleaned the house, and take care of the kids, and, oh, what do you know? Dinner. Kiddush. You know, there's a certain irony there, I think. I mean, you know, like, it's easier in a way to do the ritual than it is to actually ponder the meaning of the ritual. But I digress. Okay. So what happens when things are bad? Okay? If Hema mitbosesim ale aretz, and we are mitbosesim ale aretz, when asula buz v'kayon hefker, we've become denigrated and destroyed and hefker, ownerless, kidigei hiyam v'nefshotam v'monam. In that situation, we're like the fish of the sea, nothingness. Al achat kama v'kama. how much more so kaful umuchupal yesh al kol ish Yisrael, that is doubly incumbent upon every Jewish person, the tapel b'tzarchehem, to engage themselves in the needs. But here's how he translates it: ulhit anyein b'inyanim, to immerse ourselves in these matters. Ulhoshia lecha Yisrael b'chol mashakochol lechia, try to save the Jewish people however you can. Be'etza, with advice. Ubilimud, with study. Ubeheskel vedat, with knowledge and understanding. Mashachananu Hashem le'ir lehem haderech le'lechba, that which God has blessed you with. So meaning he's saying, if you can figure out how to solve the problem, if you have the gall to say, who am I to suggest a solution? You're almost responsible for causing the problem yourself. Which is his way of saying, I think I know what the problem is. And because I think I know what the problem is, I have to tell you. Because if I don't tell you, then I'm responsible. Okay? And you're going to see why he's building it up in a second. Okay? To get ourselves out of this great pain. Ayin b'sefer Tomer Dvara, the Marina Maram Cordovero, the Maram, Moshe Cordovero writes in Tomer Dvara, Shekatabi writes, Shetzarich lachshov tovot avur klal Yisrael mashu tov lahem. We have to think good things about the Jewish people, whatever possible. V'ayin ya'arot dvash, see the book ya'arot dvash, b'birchat ha'shiva shofteinu. He knows a lot of stuff. You get that? You're getting that? Okay. Ya'chiyuv shemutal ala manigim, the obligation of the leaders, place on leaders, lachshov tovo the klal Yisrael, to think good things for klal Yisrael. V'chol ha'tzarot sheba'ot ha'Yisrael, and the reason, this is great, oh, and the reason why all these tzarot come on klal Yisrael, who? Machmat manigim lo tovim, is because of who don't even tell him. Tell him. Tell him he's busy. Busy. Okay. Okay. Okay.
You're allowed to say no.
You're allowed to say come back in an hour. Okay. You're allowed to say that too. Okay. Okay. What is the reason? Is Arvil is a huge like bombshell. All the pain that happens to the Jewish people is because of bad leaders, bad leadership. So the question you have to ask yourself is, well, if we're in the worst trouble ever in the history of the Jewish people, what did the leaders do to get us in this trouble? What did they do wrong? And this forced me, caused me, to immerse myself and to engage. B'inyan hitakvut hagalut. Why is the Galut not coming? U'lechaber chibur hazen, to write this book, Mezat Hashem. U'lashmiya da'ati barabim, to say my piece in public. L'lamed eitza v'dat et amin b'nei Yisrael ma la'asot, to give them advice what to do. L'karev et ha'gula hiya b'imheri amenu, to bring the gula. L'kabal zizot alai b'neder, se eitzara k'mvuar le'el b'akdam ha'rishana. He said he took an oath. Remember the promise? He took the oath. I took a promise. I have to say what I have to say. That's a long way of saying I really have got to say something, right? Which makes you think that he's got something to say. He does. Ume'achar she'asur le'acher m'lekayim ha'neder ve'etzara. I can't delay my neder. K'mvuar b'midrash rabba b'Yaakov Avinu, as it says. Alken kirevti l'malacha achar she'masati k'tat menucha b'yom bo'i l'kan ir habira. He says, as soon as I rested, as soon as I had some rest, when I came to the capital city, what capital city is he in? We'll see at the end. He's in Budapest. He got to Hungary. He got out of Poland. We're going to see how. Unbelievable story. Later on. And he finally made it to Budapest. I got to Budapest and I said to myself, I made an oath. What got me here? I got to write my book. Okay? I mean, I think it's pretty impressive. Like in the middle of the Holocaust, and the first thing you think to yourself is, I got to write a book. I mean, I guess you have nothing better to do, but whatever. Okay? That speaks about building the land of Israel, and to raise it up from its dirt, from the paper piles of dirt, and to awaken love and desire in the hearts of our brothers in Israel, throughout all our nation, from young to old, lichsof is to yearn, ulihishtadel lashuv la'artzenu, to return to our land, Eretz Avotenu, the land of our forefathers, v'lo lishaer po b'artzot ha'galut, and not to stay in galut. K'muvu'ar midrash rabbah, it says, mutav lalun b'mibariyot shel Eretz Yisrael. It's better to live in the desert in Israel, v'lo lalun bepoltiriot shel chutzlaretz, than to live in the palaces of chutzlaretz. Can anybody else identify with that midrash? Right, it's better to live in the deserts in Israel than it is to live in the palaces of chutzlaretz.
That's what we're doing now.
What? That's right. Okay. What's that?
Tough slumming at life.
Yeah, we're slumming it. I mean, I mean, to be honest with you, like for a lot of history, like you can't complain about it now. I mean, you can't complain about it now. Thank God. But it is still harder. I mean, you can't deny that it's still harder. You know, you have to work harder to do the same things. The quality of life, for whatever that's worth, is still lower. You're not going to deny that. So there is a pull to say, why do I need? If it's not a value, then a person would say, you know, in the States, for the same job, I had two cars and a house three times the size. I don't know, is that true in other places as well? Right. I don't know about it. In England. In England, are there big houses? Do they have bigger houses? A little bigger. So what do I need that for? The answer is it all depends on what you value. What's your value system? So he says the following. I would underline this line. V'chol ha-makot shelakinu b'galiyot. All of the makot, all of the strife that we were afflicted with in Galiyot, it's all there to awaken us to return to our holy land. And Gvar b'midrash shochar tov. He says, basically, this is the punchline. Why is this all happening to us? Because it's God's way of saying, you don't belong in Europe. And he tried to say it, and he tried to say it, and he tried to say it. And you didn't want to listen. So at some point, he made it such that you would understand that this is not your place. And the whole point of all of this is to awaken us to return to the land, to our Eretz Yisrael HaKadosha. Muvar b'midrash shochar tov. And then, by the way, that's a hugely controversial idea. What?
Yeah, it can't be so controversial in the throes of the Holocaust. I mean,
yeah, of course it's controversial.
No, but what? It's controversial from a halachic... you know, we talked about this before. Because he's saying this as an am. I mean, he's saying this to go...
Everybody.
Right.
Correct. So, and we're being punished for the fact that we did it. And by the way, who's he blaming, first and foremost? Who is?
Himself.
Clearly he's blaming himself. Because remember, he was an anti-Zionist leader preaching against settling the land of Israel. So he says the leadership that was responsible for us not settling the land of Israel, myself included, and therefore now we're being punished. The nation of Israel is being punished. It says some people would find it theologically objectionable that God would engender a genocide on the Jewish people because they didn't settle the land of Israel. Moreover, one could imagine what his former colleagues in Satmar would say about what he just said. Can somebody suggest what they would say? What? Oh, they put him in Cherem. But what about the idea of the fact that the Holocaust came because Jews were not settling the land of Israel? What would the Satmar say?
Because I wish that
people... Correct, exactly right. His former colleague said exactly the opposite. Wrong. The reason why the Holocaust came is because the non-firm were settling the land of Israel. So he's like, you know, he's really going against the grain here to a large degree. And saying something that's theologically very questionable, very difficult.
He says, there was no consciousness in during the Holocaust in Europe that maybe I shouldn't be here.
I mean, after the Nazis started killing people, I'm sure they didn't want to be here.
Not in the Haredi world.
They didn't want to be wherever the killing was, but to
but
be in Israel.
There was no other consciousness of, wow, maybe I should go to Israel.
Okay, I should describe. In the Haredi world, the Samir are the most extreme position. But throughout the Haredi world, especially in the Yeshiva world, the notion of settling the land of Israel was not only unaccepted, it was not only frowned upon, it was 100% chazer treif. Why was settling the land of Israel considered chazer treif? For a very simple reason. The Zionists took it. Remember that throughout the end of the last half of the 19th century and the early 20th century, right, there was a huge migration of Jews from shtetl life, of everybody, from village life to city life. Along with that came the Haskalah, the Enlightenment, and along with that came, by far, wholesale abandonment of Judaism as it was practiced. I mean, you're talking about the decimation of the Jewish people from a religious perspective. Right? If you think about, like, from what we know of Jewish life in Europe, it was incredibly varied, incredibly rich. And also, like, you know, think about the societies that they had. You ever go to, like, the Yad Vashem, and they tell you about, like, what community life was. So they have the Yiddish society, and the dance society, and the drama troupes, and the whatever. And all these things were a response to a desire to express Judaism, except not be religious Jews, right? Not be frum. They just didn't want to be frum. One of the outlets, and one of the major outlets of people tried to express their Judaism and not be frum, was a movement called, which was Zionism. Right? Zionism was beautiful. Because as opposed to Jewish socialism and Jewish communism, all of which were also considered very big Jewish ideas, Arbiter Ring, Yiddish Circle, and everyone aware, there's always like these, has these socialist overtones to them, right? You know, kibbutz life, all that stuff. As opposed to all those, along came a movement which said, you could express yourself completely as a Jew, but still not have to keep really any mitzvah. So you could imagine what the rabbis had to say about that. Right? They were extremely not in favor. And the idea that someone not religious would settle the land was a desecration of the land. It wasn't a kedushat haaretz. It was considered chilu. It was like, you know what I'm saying?
It's like living a hiskam to... Oh. The religious ones did not want?
No. You could count the amount of religious Jews who were in favor of settling the land probably on the fingers of one hand.
No, that's not true. What about the Angur and all of those that came?
When?
A couple of hundred years before.
Oh, wait a second. The Vilna Gaon was in favor of settling the land. Some of his Talmidim were in favor of settling the land. You're talking about tiny, tiny percentages. After the 19th century, after the Haskalah, and after that movement, anybody in serious yeshiva positions, was really not in favor of it, except very few, the Netziv, Rav Zvi Hirsch Kalischer, who believed that, one second, even though the Zionist movement is secular, we're not in favor of Zionism as a secular movement, but there is something in the Torah about this. You know what I'm saying? The thing you take for granted, it was not taken for granted at all because the movement was hijacked. Think about it today. Why don't Haredim speak Hebrew? Well, they're starting to now. Why do they speak Yiddish for so long? I mean, think about it educationally. Does it make any sense to speak Yiddish as opposed to Hebrew? Does Yiddish have any value religiously whatsoever? Why in the mirror does my nephew now learn in Yiddish? It makes no sense at all. Right? Why? Because if you learn in Hebrew, you can learn Tanakh. You can learn Mishnah. You can understand so much of the halachic literature. So now it just happens because Israel is so popularized, like all the kids now, even the Haredim, are learning Hebrew. But why do they stick onto Yiddish for so long? And the reason is because Hebrew is treif. Why is Hebrew treif? Because the Zionists got it. And anything that smacked, it sounds strange to you, but think about this. Anything that smacked of Zionism would pull. What if you thought that if you were in favor of Zionism, it would pull half of the young people in your shul away from Frumkeit?
Why is it that Peter?
It's difficult for the modern mind to understand that, to understand the rigidity of that thinking, that one group...
Really? Have you been to Beit Tokia? Or have you been to Kiryat Sefer? Or Beitar? Have you been to Ben Abrach?
I hear. But,
yeah.
So, like, look at Art Scroll Publications, which is this huge publishing company, and has done a great deal of good for the Jews.
Yeah.
It publishes in English. English is also the language that millions of Christians speak.
Right. By the way, anybody know what one of the things we fast for on Asar HaBeTevet is? What's one of the tragedies?
The translation of the...
Right. But yeah, I digress. Right. Right.
But the fact that we can use the English language, you know, the English language can be used for, you know, the sacraments in the Catholic Church, but it can also be used for...
The study of Amma Banim Samech.
Yeah, 100%. Correct. Although I think that's Feldheim. But yeah.
This is not Feldheim, trust me. Feldheim didn't publish this book. But go ahead.
But you hear what I'm saying? Like, why the inability to see that, you know, okay, the...
Anybody here have a Haredi phone? Anybody have a Haredi phone? You know what you know the difference between a Haredi phone and a regular phone is?
No text.
No text and no internet. But doesn't the internet great for publishing podcasts of wonderful shiurim? Is the internet terrific for sending around all kinds of Torah things? Right. Did I answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? If something has a danger, if something is potentially dangerous, it's better not to touch it. It's better to put it in a cherim as opposed to touch it and understand, try to understand the good in it. And we're going to see, And he's going to ask this question. How is it possible that something that's so good, that's so positive, that's the Geula, he says it's not good, it's the key to the redemption of the Jewish people, became treif. Like, treif. You can imagine, you know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, it's almost shocking. Like, it's like somebody saying, like, no davening anymore, because if people start davening, right, they might stop being frum. Because some people who daven, they became conservative.
Right.
It's almost like that, in a sense. Yeah, Kevin, you're going to say something.
I'm saying that I don't think historically any other expression of Judaism, from a cultural sense, got the same degree of ire that Tzionut did. You don't see the Rebbeim lashing out against theater. You don't see the Rebbeim.
Oh, they lash, of course, theater.
Not nearly as much as they did for Tzionut.
Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't tell you. They definitely lashed out of theater. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, you would have seen the Pashkevan that would come out against that also. I mean, right. See it more here, but even now, you don't see a lot of the Rebbeim that will say.
No, I'm not saying it's all or nothing. I think that there's definitely I paint a black and white picture. It was clearly not black and white. There was definitely nuance. And I think the rabbinic world, the Jewish world, was much more nuanced than we let on. You know, don't think of it of the Europe world as the world that art school created for you in your mind, right? Just like nowadays there's Haredim and then there's modern and there's a whole gamut in between. Without a doubt, in Europe that existed as well. But the remnant that we have, the powerful people, the people that set the tone, like today, who sets the tone in the world for what Jews are talking about? The most extreme. If you think about it, like, who are we quoting in the papers? Everybody wants to know, what does Rav Eliezer say? What does Rav Avadya say? You know what I'm saying? These are the movers and the shakers. Nobody's asking, what are the moderate thinkers talking about in the Jewish world? If you know what I'm saying.
It doesn't sell papers.
It doesn't set the tone. And then the tone was set, Israel is treif. Anybody who moves to, anybody who's thinking about moving to Israel or settling Israel is secular, and they're in danger of their children going off the derech. So if I told you that, would you be supportive of it?
What's different than today? It's half the country thinks that...
That settling land of Israel?
No, that you don't need to be Chazak for the state of Israel.
That's very different. He didn't ever say the word state here. Mm-hmm. Okay, we have to distinguish also. All he's talking about is simply physically settling Eretz Israel. He doesn't talk about Medina Israel. We'll get to that much, much, much later. Mm-hmm. But is there anybody today that would argue about the value of living in Eretz Israel? Except Neturei Karta's 11 guys who, like, you know, go to Libya every 10 days. Except those guys who are really nuts. You know what I'm saying? No, nobody does. It's Muskam Lakol, and something's changed. You know what I'm saying? But here Rav Teichtal basically says, the reason for the Holocaust is because of Eretz Yisrael. Let's just finish up. We're going to finish on time. Okay? All of the afflictions are to awaken us. King David is subject to a magefa, a plague. Shalach HaKadosh Baruch Hu elav et Gad HaNavi. He sends Gad HaNavi. Shne'emar. It says, V'yavo David el Gad. V'yomer lo alei v'akim l'Hashem Mizbeach. Build a Mizbeach, an altar for God. Mashal le'echad shaya makeh livno. Person was smiting, striking his child. V'lo haya yodeh ben lama makeh oto. And the child has no idea, why are you hitting me? L'char shehikahu. After he hit him, amar lo. Lech aser davar ploni shtiviticha hayom kayom kama yamim v'lo asita v'lo ishtkachta bo. He says, now that I hit you, you want to know why I hit you? Remember I told you to clean your room 82 times yesterday and today. Are you wondering why I'm punishing you? Anybody? No. Don't punish your kids.
Flashback.
Jeez. Right. So, kach kol otam alafim shenaflu b'meidavi. Those thousands of people who died in the times of David, Lo naflu shel ela shelo tavu binyan beit hamikdash. The reason is because they did not yearn for the building of the Beit Hamikdash. Thousands of people died in those days, and says Rav Teichtal, same thing's happening to us. So people are dying because we don't care. And there's a lot of truth to this, he says. We're very happy with the Jewish life that we have. We have a rich, vibrant Jewish community and Jewish life. There's Torah learning, there's excitement, there's whatever. And nobody wants Mashiach. And tragically, sadly, that's a little scary today. I mean, we have movements of people that want Mashiach. I'm not talking about Chabadnikim. I'm talking about, like the Hamon Am. If you'd ask your average Jew living, probably Yad Binyamin, but for sure in like Queens or, I don't know, in my neighborhood in London, probably. I don't know my London. No, without a doubt, we don't. Right, we don't. You asked me at the beginning, what's the mission of the Jewish people? The mission of the Jewish people is to be a light to the world. And that will only happen when the Mashiach comes. When the redemption comes, and we will then be able to fulfill our mission to bring God to the world. So do we yearn for that? Do we pine for that? If you'd ask most people, Mashiach sounds pretty much like a drag. You know what I'm saying? Life is good now. Do I really want, you know... Do I really want... No.
But this is very different than Eretz Yisrael. You can yearn for the Beis Hamikdash.
That's a great place to stop. That's a great segue to be continued next week. How is it that yearning for Mashiach has anything to do with building up the land of Israel? And so we'll stop.